tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 25th of February 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I've got a really horrible news story to get into today and I'm bringing it up because it does show you the racial differences. And I'm not saying that everybody that is Pakistani is going to be like this. But the fact is that they are going to be more likely to be like this than other racial groups. And this concerns animals. And of course, Britain is a nation of animal lovers. Man's dog is his best friend. I think we probably have more dogs per head than anywhere else in the world. So mistreatment of animals, and particularly dogs, is really not something that the British people are likely to stand for. And what's gone on here is absolutely horrendous. A man who killed and tortured nearly 60 dogs after posing as a rehoming shelter, jailed for 5 years. That's all he got, is 5 years. And this isn't just somebody that was going out and attacking stray dogs. He was pretending that he was a dog charity and that he was looking after these dogs. And in actual fact, he was torturing them to death. A man who killed and tortured nearly 60 dogs in filthy conditions at his Essex home has been jailed for 5 years. You would think that he would get something more than that. I mean, this is horrendous. Ovid Rahman, 26. And I've looked up the name Ovid Rahman just to see exactly where he comes from. Because it's an Arabic name of Arabic origin, but it is most commonly used today in Bangladesh, India and Pakistan. So that's the area that this man comes from. He's quite clearly Muslim. Ovid Rahman, 26, purported to be looking after the animals at a rehoming centre called Save a Paw in Crazehill, Billericay, Essex, but he actually left them to suffer. A vet who was called to the scene with police last May said that as soon as she left her vehicle, which was parked about 40 metres away from Rahman's property, she could smell the rotting flesh. I mean, this is so horrendous. How could this go on for so long if you could literally smell the stench of his horrific crimes? Dog remains were found in bins and throughout the site, with some piled up like rubbish, the sentencing judge said. This also reminds me that they always used to say that serial killers and murderers, they always tortured animals at first. They would pull the legs off insects and torture animals, and people that mistreated animals were then likely to go on to mistreat human beings. And you wonder what other things this person has been up to, whether they were warning signs that he was the sort of person that liked to torture and kill animals. Basildon Crown Court heard on Friday that veterinary surgeon Amy Cooper saw masses of bodies riddled with maggots with rats around the kennels. Some 21 dogs which were alive were kept in pens or confined to small spaces, while 37 dead dogs were also discovered. So the dead dogs were discovered alongside the live ones. Four more dead dogs were found when a shed was demolished during a later visit, with surviving dogs left to roam among the carcasses. I mean, this must have been a sheer living hell for these animals. And the man running it was claiming that he was providing a charitable home for them. He was literally collecting money from people for this. Tom Godfrey, prosecuting, told the court that Miss Cooper said in a statement, "I can honestly say that what I smelt and saw was the most horrific thing I have ever seen." Well, she would never have needed to see that if it wasn't for the government's immigration policy, which allowed this person into our country, where he then carried this out in amongst a nation of animal lovers. It was clear just from a general initial inspection that these animals were all suffering. Sentencing him, Judge Richard Connolly said Rahman's fraud was an act of betrayal of epic proportions that has devastated many lives. I don't think this prison sentence reflects that, though, does it really? Just giving him 5 years. He said Rahman had convinced decent and well-meaning pet owners to entrust their beloved animals into his care. In fact, many animals taken in by you were subjected to prolonged barbaric mistreatment, cruelty and neglect, Judge Connolly said. Some of them died directly as a result. And yet Judge Connolly only gave him 5 years, which means that he will be released after 2 years. Feces was found inside the pens and cages, and many of the dogs were severely underweight but did not have access to food, the court heard. Ms. Cooper said the dogs kept in pens would have faced mental turmoil, as there were open bags of food in the property which they could not access. So he was starving them. He had all the food there and he just wasn't feeding them. He was torturing them. Victims whose dogs were rehomed by Rahman and their supporters in the packed public gallery sobbed as Mr. Godfrey told of the condition the animals were found in. People trusted him with their pet dogs that he was going to find them a forever home for them. Later, after Rahman was sentenced, a victim in the court shouted at him through the video link, "FB, I hope you rot in there, you dirty bee." Three of the 21 dogs were so unwell that they had to be put down, and one poodle later went blind, the court heard. Rahman previously pleaded guilty to cruelty against 21 dogs and a cat and 11 counts of fraud by false representation. I guess that was all that they could prosecute him under. But really, I mean, this shows that he has a wish to torture animals. Emma Thompson said she feels extremely traumatised by what happened to her dog, having planned to rehome him after the Dalmatian Pointer Cross had shown signs of aggression, and she was pregnant. "I often think about how confused, scared and sad Lennon must have felt being taken from the family he loved, transported to Essex and taken to a stranger," she said in a victim impact statement read to the court by Mr. Godfrey. "He would have smelt the death of other dogs at the property." Miss Thompson paid Rahman a £300 surrender fee and a further £200 as a charitable donation. Lennon was one of the dogs found dead during the first raid. Tina Davis, another of Rahman's victims, took her dog Chad, a pocket bully, to Save a Paw to be rehomed after he had a fight with her other dog. In her victim impact statement read to the court, she said, "I was devastated at the prospect of giving up my dog, but knew it was required for Chad to have the best possible life. I torture myself wondering how much he suffered. He must have thought I didn't love him to leave him at that wretched place. I question if I will ever forgive myself." But the thing is, it's not something that a white man would ever do, really, is it? Torture dogs like that. And I'm not saying that because I just dislike non-white people. I mean, it's a known fact that Muslims tend to dislike dogs. It's part of the Islamic religion. When we get to the end of this, we'll have a look at the reason why for that. So I would have been suspicious straight away at somebody who was quite clearly Muslim running a charitable home for dogs. But of course, most people don't know that. They don't know these sorts of things because they're not told anything that could be perceived as negative about any of these groups that the government have invited into our country. One of the most obvious things about Islam is that they don't have a liking for dogs. And yet, the British people, dog is a man's best friend. And the British people love their dogs. And yet our government have imported a people in amongst us who have a dislike for dogs. I mean, we even learned about this the other day when we were being told about how racist the countryside was and how we have to keep our dogs hidden away because otherwise certain ethnic groups will feel as if they're being excluded from the countryside. And that's what this boils down to, is this dislike of dogs. Some of Rahman's victims contacted him on his Facebook page for Save a Paw, which had good reviews, the court heard. He was sometimes paid a surrender fee and also accepted donations to his organisation, which he told victims was a charity, but in fact an application for charitable status had been refused. Rahman took around £4,800 from his 11 victims, telling them it would be used to rehome dogs, provide a new kennel block, or train dogs to behave around children and other animals. So this makes you wonder where he got the other victims from, the dog victims, because there were over 20 dogs there that they found, and only 11 people that actually gave these dogs to him. So where did he get the other dogs from? Did he just kidnap them? Did he steal them? He promised to keep in touch with people about how their dogs were doing, the court heard, but often became difficult to contact and in some cases blocked the people who had taken their dogs to him. I should imagine he probably saw them as being inferior people because they liked dogs. He probably saw them as being unclean. Officers said they spoke to people in 20 counties in connection with Rahman's crimes, with people from as far as Scotland using Rahman's services to rehome their dogs. We will never truly know the extent of how far maybe offending or this behaviour has gone, said Superintendent Lee Norris of Essex Police. When Molly Pincus, mitigating, said Rahman had expressed remorse over his crimes, people in the public gallery sighed, tutted, shook their heads and even laughed. So the people that had experience of this man did not think that he had any remorse for this. I mean, that sort of implies that they believe that he enjoyed doing this. He got a kick out of torturing these animals. Judge Connolly had to ask the court for quiet to allow Miss Pincus to continue. He asked her for some understanding of motivation. It is so impossible to understand what can cause a person to do the things that he did, Judge Connolly said. I cannot make sense of it. Probation cannot make sense of it. The psychiatrist cannot make sense of it. Well, I can make sense of it. The guy's Muslim, and Muslims have a dislike of dogs. Let's have a look what Google's artificial intelligence has to say about this. Muslims do not inherently hate dogs, but rather, traditional Islamic jurisprudence often considers them ritually impure, particularly their saliva and wet fur. This view stems from hadith, which is sayings of Prophet Muhammad, that recommend washing items seven times if a dog licks them. Now, if you have to wash something seven times, that's pretty much saying that whatever it is that touched that item is unclean. Consequently, many Muslims avoid keeping dogs inside their homes because the impurity can invalidate daily prayers, although working dogs for hunting or guarding are permitted. So it's not, oh dear, I have to wash my hands. It's that this will put a curse on them if they have anything to do with dogs, and it will invalidate their prayers. Key reasons for this avoidance include ritual impurity. A dog's saliva is considered a major impurity by most, notably the Shafi school of thought, meaning strict cleaning is needed after contact. So not a minor impurity, a major impurity. And bear in mind that a lot of people in Britain have dogs and a lot of people in Britain love dogs, and yet we have imported this ethnic group into our country that consider dogs to be a major impurity, a curse, effectively. Cleanliness is crucial for prayer. If a dog's saliva touches clothing or a prayer mat, it must be cleansed, leading many to avoid them. This means that if you're a Muslim and you're out on the street and a dog brushes past you, which could well easily happen, then Muslim is going to be very annoyed at that, isn't he? You can understand why Muslims would be against dogs and not like dogs when their religion tells them this. I mean, as it says here, they don't hate them, but they do dislike them. Some hadiths suggest that angels do not enter a house that contains a dog, leading to a spiritual preference against keeping them as house pets. Again, what is it, what do they think about the Christian people of Britain who keep dogs? They're going to consider it that those people themselves are impure as well. No angels bother to visit their houses. Their prayers won't be listened to because they've got a dog in there. They don't wash after being licked by the dog, or the dog brushes against their clothing. It really does mean that they're going to look at the British people that keep dogs as being inferior, quite clearly. Some scriptures mention a loss of spiritual rewards for keeping dogs that are not for functional purposes, such as farming, hunting, or protection. And as you say, we have this British saying, a man is a dog's best friend. Well, quite clearly, if you're a Muslim and you think somebody has a dog because it's a friend to them, they're going to consider that as being a really bad thing, because that person is not keeping the dog for a specific function. That person is keeping the dog because he wants to be friendly with an animal that will prevent angels from visiting houses and will prevent your prayers from being heard. Now, it also says that it is important to note that Islam also teaches compassion for all animals. Stories in Islamic tradition tell of a woman being rewarded with heaven for saving a thirsty dog, highlighting that kindness towards them is expected. Well, clearly this person that owned this dog kennel didn't think that. He clearly didn't see Islamic tradition as teaching that. He just thought that, how he could have kept them in his house if he was a Muslim, because, or on his property. I mean, this is the reason why he didn't like them, I think, because at the back of his mind, he must have been thinking all the time, well, this will prevent angels from visiting me. This will prevent my prayers from actually having any effect. I mean, I would have been immediately suspicious upon seeing a Muslim that was claiming to be running a dog's shelter. But that's because I know a little bit about differences between ethnic groups. Most people don't. This sort of information, even though you can find it by looking up, asking the question on AI, is not the sort of question that most people are going to ask. All we're ever told about are positive things about immigrants and ethnic groups. We're never told anything about the negative side of it. You know, but perhaps it would be better if we're going to have this multicultural system, if they would just be honest, they could prevent a lot of these things from taking place. They could go to schools and say, look, Pakistanis are overrepresented amongst these grooming gangs. You run a risk of being groomed and raped. Perhaps you should avoid this group. Muslims don't like dogs. If you see a Muslim that is claiming to run a dog's home, perhaps it wouldn't be such a good idea of you to bring your dog there and give them to him. Black people are more likely to be involved in violent crime. They're 5 times more likely to be jailed for violent crime than white people are. So perhaps it might be a good idea to avoid black people, or at least if it looks like a black person is angry, definitely avoid angering him even more. I mean, these are all sensible things. I'm not saying these things out of hatred for people. I'm saying these things out of statistical fact, for established facts. But they're not the sort of facts that people are going to be taught in school. And perhaps they should be. If we're going to have a multicultural country, then these sorts of things should definitely be taught in school, because they could prevent offences from taking place. If young white girls are taught or encouraged not to speak to people from these communities, then that would have prevented them from being groomed and raped in the first place. But of course, we won't do that, because we'll be accused of hating on these other communities for pointing out statistical evidence that might portray them in a negative light. Getting back to the article here, Judge Connolly said Rahman, who was privately educated, suffered with mental ill health and began his enterprise with a genuine desire to look after his dogs. I should imagine, I'm not certain, but I should imagine when he got arrested for this, he then was worried about what was going to happen to him and probably went to see the doctor and got something for his anxiety. And then he could have a prescription that he could then show to the probation to say, look, I've got anxiety issues. And therefore, she can then say in the court, oh, he suffers with mental ill health. Mr. Godfrey said Rahman made the decision to house these dogs in inhumane conditions. Whether this was some satisfaction from the power that he was able to exert over these dogs is a matter for your honour. but it is difficult to see why else Rahman would house the live dogs with the deceased dogs. So what they're implying there is that he was deliberately doing this to torture the dogs. That's why it's saying he's getting some satisfaction from the power that he was able to exert over these dogs. I mean, just from what we've read here, you wouldn't instantly assume that he was doing this because he liked the power that he had over these dogs. But the fact that this is actually brought up to the judge, that it's up for the judge to decide whether that's a factor, does mean that during the trial it was implied that that could have been a factor. I'm aware that no sentence that I can lawfully impose can adequately reflect the justifiable anger and disgust at what you have done, the judge said. Some wrongs simply cannot be put right. Perhaps he deliberately did this because he didn't like the fact that dogs prevented angels from entering houses, and dogs would put a curse on people. So he was trying to hurt the people that put a curse on people and prevented their prayers from being heard. I mean, that could have been a reason for him doing this. He sentenced Rahman to 5 years imprisonment, with 38 months of that for animal cruelty. The animal cruelty sentence will run consecutively to the fraud counts, for which he was sentenced to 22 months for each count, to all run concurrently. He was also sentenced to 3 months imprisonment to run concurrently for owning a banned XL bully, and was banned from owning dogs and cats for life. And don't forget, he was mistreating a cat here as well. Rahman can apply for the ban to be lifted after 15 years. He was also sentenced to a deprivation order, meaning the dogs found at his property can be taken and costs will be dealt with at a later date. It is a shame we don't have laws against torturing animals. I mean, there is a really horrific thing that goes on where you get people that literally torture monkeys or torture puppies for sick people to watch on video. And I do believe that the people that actually watch these sick videos are disproportionately female as well. When I was in prison, there was a lad there who was claiming to be transgender, and he basically had newspaper stuffed down the front of his t-shirt to make it look like breasts. On one of the wings that he was on, some of the lads pulled this scrunched up newspaper out, and of course he then claimed that that was homophobia and tried to get the people into trouble for that. But the people knew that he only began to say that he was transgender once he'd actually been put in prison. And I was quite polite to him and quite courteous to him. Tried to say to him, look, if you're going to go down this path, you really don't want to be taking the other gender's hormones, the other sex's hormones, because it will leave you in a really bad way. You won't be able to think straight. And then I found out that the reason why he was actually sent to prison is because he had been torturing puppies to death on videos for YouTube. So there are these sick people out there that want to see these things. They want to see animals being tortured. And this lad was one of them. He was torturing puppies. He was a white lad. He wasn't non-white. In this case, as I say, it's the guy that carried this out is likely Bangladeshi or Pakistani or Indian. This was a white lad that was doing this. And I say it's extremely rare for a white person to be doing this. But at least in Islam, it does tell them that dogs are unclean. As I say, we've had a look at what Muslims think about dogs. But another interesting aspect to this is what I was saying about white people being animal lovers and Britain being a nation of animal lovers and saying that a dog is a man's best friend. Because if you look up ethnic demographics of being a vet, you can see that white people are disproportionately represented in the veterinary profession. Again, I got this from just looking it up on Google from the AI. The veterinary profession in the UK and the US is predominantly white, with data indicating it is one of the least ethnically diverse professions. Why might that be? Well, I would suggest that it is because white people have a love for animals, which we may not necessarily find in other ethnic groups. think about in Africa, where they would literally eat anything, whatever they see, they will eat. That's what bushmeat is. Think about China, where they will eat dogs, what we consider in Britain to be man's best friend. I think in Korea, they eat dogs as well. And as you see here, Muslims are, they don't hate dogs, but they dislike dogs. They see them as being ritually impure. So we can see that it's just one of these things, that it's mainly white people have a concern for animals. This is what I say. If I had seen a Muslim in charge of a dog rescue shelter, that would have sent alarm bells off straight away for me. But one of the good things about white people is our empathy. And our empathy doesn't just stretch to other human beings, it also stretches to animals, as we can see here. In the United Kingdom, around 95% to 96.5% of vets identify as white. So you could say basically 97% of vets in Britain are white, while black, Asian and minority ethnic representation is significantly lower than the general population, with approximately 3% of vets being from black and minority ethnic backgrounds. And black and minority ethnic, probably about 20% of the population. UK veterinary demographic data. White British Irish, 14,379. White other, 7,750. Mixed, 475. Asian, 425. Black, 367. Chinese, 137. Other, 27. And non-binary, 7. So we have some transgender vets out there. But you can see that vastly overrepresented are white people in this. The vast majority of vets are white. Key findings on diversity. In 2019, only 3% of vets were from black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds, compared to 15% of the general UK population. Veterinary nurses. The veterinary nursing profession is also heavily white, with approximately 1.9% of registered veterinary nurses coming from black and minority ethnic backgrounds. So they're even less likely to be a nurse. Racism and inclusion. Studies indicate that black and minority ethnic veterinary staff and students have reported experiencing racism. So they're trying to claim that it's racism that is the reason why black and minority ethnics don't choose to become veterinary nurses. Surely a better answer for that would be, well, because perhaps they don't have the same concern for animals that white people have. But of course, we're just supposed to assume that everything on two legs has exactly the same viewpoint as we do, and exactly the same empathy as we do. Whereas I would say that if you look culturally at some of these groups, it's quite clear they don't think the same way as we do. Just Muslims, for instance, what their religion tells them. Clearly, they're not going to think the same way about pet dogs as white people are. And that's going to be the reason why they don't choose to become a vet, because if they choose to become a vet, it means that none of their prayers will be answered. Gender and age. In the United Kingdom, 58% of vets are female, with an average age of 40, while male vets have an average age of 51. And that's probably because there are more vets that are becoming female now, with more women going to university and less men going to university. And you would imagine that, yes, that perhaps women would choose to go into the veterinary profession, especially if they've trained medically, hoping to become a doctor or something like that, and not actually making the grade and then becoming a vet. I mean, that's most of the reason why people actually become vets. And I think what we can see there is racial differences. I don't think it's racism that's keeping black and Muslim and Chinese people from becoming vets. I think it's just that they come from a different ethnic group that doesn't look at animals in the same way that we do. Now, as I say, if people ever do see a Muslim running a pet shop or a charity home for dogs, I would definitely be suspicious about that. I would say it definitely needs more investigation. Perhaps the person claims not to be an observant Muslim, but that would be a little bit unbelievable if they've been brought up culturally to believe that dogs prevent their prayers being answered and dogs prevent angels visiting houses. This could have all been avoided, couldn't it, really, if the government had not changed its immigration policy to allow people into Britain who were non-white. These poor animals would still be here if it wasn't for the government's immigration policy. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.